Gunness, I want to thank you for being with us, speaking to us from Jerusalem. Chris Gunness is the spokesperson for the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, known as UNRWA. And that does it for our broadcast. You can get a copy of today's show by going to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is hiring. We have openings for administrative director as well as fall internships. Visit democracynow.org/jobs for more information. I'll be speaking in Martha's Vineyard at the Catherine Cornell Auditorium in Vineyard Haven, 7 o'clock. On July 26th, Saturday night. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feld, Sarah Mate, Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkov, Hani Massoud, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. The downing of an airliner over Ukraine is but the latest episode in a long, bloody history in Eastern Europe. We'll talk about some of that history and invite your comments and observations.
Tune in Tuesday night at 6 p.m. to Out Loud, KBOO's queer culture radio show.
Out Loud celebrates and serves the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and allied communities.
Out Loud features interviews with local and national community groups, authors, musical talent, and anyone from the queer community.
Connect with us online at kboo.fm/outloud. Tune in Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
Why not a woman?
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Sex Workers film series. The film to screen on August 2nd will be Mutantes, Punk Porn Feminism. Is pornography an acceptable form of expression? And if so, can distinctions be drawn between different forms of pornography? This documentary raises a number of questions, seeking to provide the answers from the perspective of pro-sex feminism, which asserts that pornography must be wrested from patriarchal control, and that in the hands of women and sexual minorities, it can become a tool of liberation. Again, that's Mutantes, screening as part of the Sex Workers film series, Saturday, August 2nd, at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Listening to the sweet sounds of the Soviet era on KBOO-FM.
Yes, I'm Joe. Yes, this is the opportunity to appreciate the Soviet version of Slaughter.
We went from smooth evening DJ to something very weird.
Yeah, right something there. Went wrong. Something went wrong.
This
happened?
Is the Abe
what
and Joe
happened
show?
To our narrative?
I'm Abe. That's Joe. This is the Abe and Joe Show. KBOO, 90.7 FM on your dial.
Yes.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. A Malaysian Airlines flight was shot down last week near the Russian-Ukraine border.
Well, it's because of Malaysian Airlines. They plains disappear. They get shot down. What the hell?
Yeah, I don't think that has anything to do with it.
No, of course
I think it was the projectile that hit the plane that brought it down.
The projectile
clearly
was a Soviet design.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it Soviet-era design and not a post-Soviet design?
Well, it could be. No, actually, it is Soviet era design.
Okay.
And it's a brilliant weapon. It's a missile that goes supersonically, has an enormous range height-wise. It is when it has a proximity fuse, so that when it's within a certain distance, very little, very close to its target, it explodes, pushing forward like a shotgun, huge amounts of shrapnel together with the blast itself, piercing the body of the plane, going into the engines, going into various crucial parts of the aircraft, and of course, killing all the people on it,
and knocking
it
out of the sky. Yeah,
yeah. In fact, you can see in several of the scary photos, homemade photos of it, what appear to be people dropping out.
Oh, that's grim.
It's grim. It's ugly. It's horrible. It's unnecessary. And I think it was done by drunken louts.
So many things are.
Well, yes.
Well, we don't know for sure, but the case seems to be that the missile was fired by pro-Russian separatists in Ukraine.
Seems to be so. Though there are accusations.
Must definitely qualify that statement.
Though there are accusations, and conceivably, possibly true, but I don't think so, that in fact the Ukrainian government did it, or that the Russia itself did it.
You sound like John McCain there.
Well,
kind of wishing
warp.
The Soviet Union were still around.
Right, I have a time warp, and just like McCain, I want to go to war.
All right, so if the missile was in fact fired by a pro-Russian separatist in Ukraine, it begs the question, where did they get it? And in all likelihood, and again, we must qualify this statement, one probably must presume that it came from Russia.
Well, it could have come from there, or it could have, when they occupied the territory, these pro-Russian separatists, they could have grabbed it there then. You know, it would have been in Ukrainian hands and then slipped into their hands.
I see, yes. Yeah.
The problem with all of that is that this is a complex weapon. And I don't know that drunken louts could figure out how to set the fuses and how to set it up to hit an airplane. Now, we do know that the drunken louts had shot down at least one transport plane of the Ukrainians. And we do know that they claimed that they shot down an F-14. American-made plane that had been given to Ukraine.
Right.
So they acknowledge those, and there's also allegedly, according to the Ukrainians, a conversation between a Soviet officer and some of the separatists. Pardon me, I keep saying that, and it's got to stop. The Russian officer and somebody else, and that on the separatist side, and the Russian officer just was trying to find out what the hell happened because they saw it on their radar, of course.
Right.
And it went away. You and I, and most people in the United States, assume that this weapon was provided by the Russians, the training was provided by the Russians, but any combination of all that is significant. Most importantly, perhaps, the training question.
Indeed. That is the simplest explanation.
Yeah.
And statistically, probably the most likely to be true. But we must, again, say we don't know for sure. But the point of this program is not to engage in speculation about who exactly shot down that plane, but to paint a picture of the larger context. And that is that the historical region of Eastern Europe known as the Bloodlands, the Balkan states, Belarus, Ukraine, Poland, has been literally soaked in blood over the centuries. Millions of people have died there, mostly as a result of being crushed between empires to the east and empires to the west.
And empires to the north, actually.
Empires
Lithuania.
To the north, yes.
Lithuania.
Yeah, or even the Swedes. But this is yet another example of that, I think, as you will see as we lay this context out a little further. So why don't we get into that?
Okay, now I have here at least an hour's worth of lecture on the history of the Ukraine.
So take notes.
Well,
it'll be a quiz.
I don't know that we want to do that. I also want to hear from people in our audience on this. And I want to be able to refer to those notes in case there are misunderstandings. But there are a couple of things that really are important. Ukrainian nationalism was a significant force at various times. But also what we think of as Ukraine was at various times part of the Rus Empire, which was not Russia per se, but to
Kiev and Rus. Right.
Yeah. There was also a major rebellion against Poland, largely because of the imposition, I think, of Polish nationalism and Polish Catholicism on these people who were Orthodox, if they were anything. Meanwhile, something else to be understood here is there was a large population of Jewish people living in this region, mm-hmm. mostly in tiny towns, mm-hmm. but also in the cities. And they were a part of the intelligentsia. They were also reasonably successful. And whenever pogroms were committed by any of the local folk, particularly the Russians, the targets were always these Jews. And then, beginning with the Nazi invasion in 41, continuing on through that period of struggle through 44, we see the decision of the Nazis to kill all the Jewish people. We also see the rise of a nationalist movement of Ukraine separatism that opposes both the Soviet Union at the time and the Nazis, but mostly seem to be fighting the Soviets.
Engineer Steve weighs in to note that U.S. spy satellites have been watching every square inch of Eastern Europe and know exactly when and where that rocket was launched, as well as the license plate numbers on the truck that launched it. That may very well be true. It may be very well be true that the U.S. government knows more than it's saying at this point.
Well, I'm not about to dispute right. that, nor to insist that it's so. But, you know, this goes so far back, this whole thing. This is the Khanite of the Golden Horde. Whoa, the Khanate of the Golden Horde. This is the rise of the Grand Duchy of Lithuania and the Kingdom of Poland and the struggles around those nations.
Yeah, the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
In the end, the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
The Ottoman
Empire.
Turks.
Yes.
And on and on and on.
And a war in the Crimea, which was not then part specifically of Ukraine, by the way. The war in the Crimea to gain control of all of the shipping that would lead into the Mediterranean. The British were a major player in that. And the charge of the Light Brigade, all very famous.
Yeah, Winston Churchill made his name there.
Yeah.
Among other people.
Well, it was Gallipoli.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Anyway, so we have a history of horror in a vast area, much of which was the breadbasket of that whole region. And we need to understand that Stalin decided to destroy the successful peasant class, the kulaks, as they were known. And the way he did that was to essentially starve to death 4 million or more people.
Yes.
Makes you mad and that makes you mean.
This was in the post-Lenin Soviet period of enforced collectivism.
Right.
Stalin made the kulaks out to be this sort of wealthy class of peasants who were lording it over everybody, when in fact that wealth may have amounted to no more than a single cow owned by a single family.
Well, and the ability to feed oneself.
The ability to feed oneself, indeed. So there were the blood soaking in during that the period around the Second World War mm-hmm. began long before hostilities broke out in the Second
absolutely.
World War itself. And on we go till today.
Well, and it is a tragic story over a vast landscape. And the reason they call it the Bloodlands is not just because of all these civil wars and local wars and big national wars, but also the slaughter of the Jewish people in the region.
Yeah.
You reach a point in these kinds of struggles where your identity, it's identity politics in the ultimate sense, your identity decides whether you live or die, depending upon who's coming through with guns.
Yeah. So we're going to talk some more about this. Yeah. We're also taking your calls, 503-231-8187. Also taking your comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe.
Okay.
So please continue, Professor.
Well, I'm not sure I want to play that role so much here. I do think, though, that we need...
Oh, I think you do.
Well, no, I don't. We need to understand... we really need to understand the vast sweep of all of this. I mean, this is previous to this, in the earliest history that we have of the region, this was the Scythian turf. And the Scythians were extremely influential in terms of design and thought during a period that we don't study that much here in the West, and I don't know how much is known in the rest of the world about it, but it was always a peasant society. And if you ever saw the movie, I can't remember the title, it was A Song of Russia, Something About the Ukraine, which was a propaganda movie made in Hollywood, pro-Soviet, because of course we were fighting on the Soviet side in World War II, mm-hmm. which portrays the Ukraine as happy dancing peasants singing charming folk songs and doing charming folk dances, suddenly attacked viciously by the Nazis, who they resist effectively to the end of the movie.
Hmm.
And that is the result of that in the long run is during the rise of the Cold War, all the people in Hollywood who had made that movie, all the people in Hollywood who had done essentially what was the work of the government's building a unity between the United States and the Soviet Union, an unlikely alliance, essentially were dissed and were red-baited and were driven out of Hollywood in huge numbers, actually. So there is an American political element of repression associated with the assumptions of pro-Soviet feeling that were encouraged by the U.S. government in a united front against fascism. So that's pretty significant in and of itself. Now, there is no question that Stalin did kill millions of people. And in Ukraine, probably about 4 million. We have to guesstimate because nobody counted the bodies, literally. And there is no question that a decision, once the collapse of the Soviet Union took place, had to be made. There was a lot of struggle, a lot of political disorganization, something called the Orange Revolution, which was an attempt to establish an independent Ukraine. The biggest argument was whether the Ukraine should tilt toward Western Europe and the European Union or tilt toward the would-be Russian new united economy. And that decision has not really been finalized. The obvious solution, which was actually proposed by the Russians at one point, was to create a neutralized Ukraine. But that was rejected by the United States. That was rejected by Europe. And in the middle of all this, you have to understand the natural gas and oil flowing out of the Soviet, the old Soviet system, out of the Russian system, to Western Europe becomes crucial for their health, for their supply of energy. Mm-hmm. So this real politic of petroleum products is a major force in all of this struggle. Meanwhile, the pro-Soviet and they pro-Russian, originally pro-Soviet, but now pro-Russian forces have moved in to occupy large parts of eastern Ukraine. The Russians essentially grabbed Crimea back, which you could argue was originally just sort of deeded to them by Khrushchev and that crowd.
Yeah, Crimea, we should mention, is the peninsula that sticks down into the Black Sea.
Right.
One of the warmer parts of what has mostly
been
Russia. Oh,
it's quite lovely.
Yeah, throughout the years. And the boundary of what we know as Ukraine was drawn during, as you mentioned, during the Soviet era. And after the collapse of the Soviet Union, those borders remained intact. So the people who are clamoring right now to separate from Ukraine are largely Russian, ethnically, linguistically, culturally, Russian. So what we're dealing with here, in addition to the centuries-long trend we're talking about, is the continuing fallout of the end of the Soviet Empire.
Yes, and it's really also important to understand that whatever the intention of the Russians, whatever their actual involvement here, the people who are the irregulars, let's call them that, of the army in favor of merging with Russia, do not appear to be well-disciplined. They do not appear to be rational. They do appear and present themselves as very dangerous. And as I characterized them earlier, and perhaps unfairly, since I'm generalizing about a lot of people, drunken, the armed forces there seem to me to be well-armed, drunken louts.
Never a good combination.
No, you don't want to mix alcohol with guns, although apparently in America that's a tradition.
Yes, good times. That's a Tuesday.
Yeah, right. Good times in the bar. Okay, anyway, so this situation, however, has the potential of growing out of control. One of the things we discover historically as we look at these kinds of events, particularly most notably World War I, things can get out of control really fast. And it's really hard to call back your armies. It's really hard to retreat from war, particularly when there's money to be made, when there's ambitions to be served. National ambitions, local ambitions, and so on. And this is a classic situation of that kind. Now, knocking down this international flight may be the shock, one can hope, it's the best thing that can come out of it, may be the shock that gets everybody back to the table to talk and figure out a solution to all of this.
Well, maybe, unless your name happens to be Senator McCain. Thank everything holy that man is not president. He never met a conflict he didn't want to jump into with both feet. He went on TV
Well, he suffers from extreme PTSD. Let's be clear about this.
Yeah, I think that's probably correct.
We need to understand his psychiatric problems.
Right, but he's a real man, so he never sought treatment.
I don't know about that.
Oh, well, I don't know either.
Okay.
I'm being slanderous right now.
Yeah, you really are.
Yeah. So he went on TV with Senator Lindsey Graham, another one.
Oh,
Lindsey
Graham.
Conservative warmongers. And both of them were speaking ominously of grave consequences for Russia, should it prove to be true, as it appears to be, that the missile that shot down the plane came from Russia and was given to the separatists in Ukraine.
And trained by the Russians.
And trained by the Russians.
The training is the crucial question, because those missile launchers were in Ukraine for a long, long period of time. It's very easy to imagine that such a missile launcher, or more than one of them, was seized during the period of time when the would-be pro-Russian separatist republic was created. It's very possible they were there. But if I give somebody a very complex weapon system and tell them, okay, now you have a complex weapon system, they're not going to be able to use it unless they get training. And right. That's where the Russians definitely come in. So here we are. And meanwhile, Putin is on another trip entirely, totally another trip. It would have been good. It would have been the simplest solution had the West not been so ambitious, particularly the European Union. And essentially, Ukraine was told to stay neutral, period.
Period.
But that didn't happen.
No, it didn't.
So here we are. And this is but one of many world-threatening conflicts going on in the context of a situation of crisis in terms of climate and resources that seems endless.
It does. We've been critical of President Obama on this program.
Have we?
But I sure don't envy the guy his job. He's got the worst job in the world.
Yeah, his hair's gotten gray.
It has. We've got a phone call. Should we take it?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Joanne, good morning.
231-8187.
Yeah, hello. I'm in kind of ongoing shock anymore, so it's going to be hard for me to speak. So I'm going to be brief for myself with you folks. First of all, I'd like to know why that airplane was flying over Ukraine. Second, are the countries of the world going to allow the U.S. and Russia start World War III because of it? And last, in the meantime, is Israel going to destroy Gaza? Bye.
Okay, well, we're not going to deal with Gaza today. That's another horror show that we will deal with, but this is not the show today. As to the question of Ukraine, well, we don't know. Nobody knows how far this can go or whether wise minds prevail. My sense is that nobody, neither the Russians nor the European Union nor the United States, really want to get into a war around this thing.
Unless you're John McCain.
Unless you're John. Well, John McCain doesn't count, man.
He does.
Well, he counts as one senator, you know.
Okay, he's one of these guys, and there are a few of them out there, who's wrong every time he opens his mouth, but he's called to be on national TV to give his opinion all the time. A lot of people listen to him. He was a man who was nearly president. He's symbolic in the minds of a lot of generally pro-war Americans because he's the white dude who is not the president and could have been the president.
Well, he couldn't, actually.
So
there wasn't a chance in hell.
Agreed. But he's symbolic of some of these things.
Yes.
And a lot of people listen to what he has to say, even though he's always wrong.
Well, and he does speak to a kind of bellicose nationalism that has, at various times in the United States, kind of led our foreign policy.
Well, it's led our foreign policy since September 11.
Well, and
absolutely,
you could argue it led our foreign policy since 1941. 42.
Yes, you could.
All right. So, we could just end it here. We could say, well, it's bad.
Okay,
it's a bad situation.
That's all.
Goodbye. But I would like to hear from people other than ourselves who have some ideas about this thing, about the resolution of it, and perhaps have some historical notions or information that can help us to understand this. I, before we turn to those people, want to emphasize the term bloodlands is not just an ugly appellation. It is, in fact, the history of that region from going way back to the 11th century. I mean, this is a place where wars took place on vast plains. It is a place of value because it is a breadbasket for grain.
Mm-hmm.
It is a place that saw contention between the Golden Horde, which, whoa, the Golden Horde, which was essentially a revisionist recreation, basically Turkic peoples who were conquering as they moved to the east. I think largely because Lake Baikal was drying up at the time, but I'm not sure that's correct. This is a place where the Rus, the original Russians, were very much in power and very much dominant. This is a place where Catholics versus Eastern Orthodox were engaged in a serious struggle over and over again. This is, in short, a perfect place for exactly what happened. And in the midst of this were the large numbers of Jewish people who were living in small, often in smaller settlements, often as farmers, and who were routinely, every Easter time, attacked in what are called pogroms. They were raped, they were murdered, their property was seized. This was all an encouragement largely by the Poles and the Russians to discourage awareness of the failings of the central governments there.
And Bloodlands also is the title of a wonderful book released in 2010 by Yale historian Timothy Snyder, specifically about this region when it existed between the empires of Stalin and Hitler. The scale of the carnage there really beggars belief. You really have to read about it to truly believe it.
And there's a lesson here in general terms, which we're going to see play out elsewhere. These long-term nationalistically based or ethnically based struggles don't resolve. They may be under control, but they're there simmering constantly. And now we're seeing this pop out. You know, there was the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, which was very hopeful for a democratic government. That essentially has collapsed inwardly. There is a separate Ukraine. That Ukraine has alternated between a pro-Russian focus and a pro-European Union focus. And with those two forces in contention, meanwhile, with the land being a key route for natural gas and oil, it becomes incredibly important to the West and to Russia.
So we're taking your phone calls, 503-231-8187. Also taking your comments on our Facebook page, abeandjoe.com. Facebook.com/abeandjoe.
Yeah, really?
Although we should go get ourselves abeandjoe.com, shouldn't we?
Oh, we could.
We should. Yeah. Facebook.com/abeandjoe. Click the like button while we're there so we can feel better about ourselves, please. Let's go to John.
Yeah. A little deviation from the history, but what I've been hearing on the news about this whole Ukraine thing that happened like last winter, I think, when everything was kind of popping up just before the Winter Olympics, that there's a war going on between the West, always has, but it's an economic war between Russia and the EU and the United States, or I should say Wall Street.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's not really, we could care, regular person on the street could care less. But anyway, we were talking a little bit of a conspiratorial conversation at work, and it seems though, I haven't been keeping up with it, but this one person has, and he said that a lot of passports that were accumulated from around the debris and stuff were of Belgium and Dutch descent. You know what people?
Well, the majority of the people on that airplane were Dutch, and the flight was co-listed with KLM, which is the Dutch airline, and with the Malaysian airline.
Well, one person was talking about. He says, "You know, isn't EU headquarters in Brussels?" And I said, "Well, I don't know."
Well, yes. The short answer to that is yes.
Maybe this is Putin's little message, shooting across the bow, to back off.
Well, let me just respond to that just as a practical, real politic question. There's no advantage that I can conceive of shooting down a civilian plane in Ukraine by the Russians. What is the message? What is the import of it? What I think really is much more likely, and I always like to look for the prime cause, the most likely cause, what's called Occam's razor or Morgan's canon in the sciences, which is look for the most likely, easiest to explain things and see if that doesn't work before you look for more exotic explanations of things. And basically, my understanding of this is that it's unclear exactly who was training who, but let's presume that these missile launchers and the missiles became available to these pro pro-Russian separatists, and let's even assume that they somehow got training, perhaps by irregulars or guerrillas or even directly by the Russians, and then they were left on their own to make up their own minds about what would be a target. They believed, as I understand it, that the plane they shot down was not the Malaysian flight, but a transport of troops from Ukraine into the lands that were trying to be separatist.
Well, it sounds like KAL 007, where some people were saying that there was a spy plane that was in parallel with that airline, and actually they were going after that to the spy airplane, and they hit the passenger.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I really just think that I like the explanation that hyped-up nationalists, drunken louts, had a weapon far too sophisticated and far too dangerous for their intellectual level at that time, but they had the skills to operate it, and they were successful.
Okay, well, just going back to, you know, like, I think you were talking earlier about treaties and stuff being signed. It seemed like, you know, it's 100th anniversary of World War One, and, you know, it's kind of interesting how, you know, Russia has been... Well, has already signed like an economic treaty with the Chinese.
Well, sure.
And so it seems like we're going right back to, you know, 100 years ago, where, you know, nations are signing treaties and promises that the general public doesn't understand or will never know.
So we're reassembling that teetering house built of alliances, and once one piece is knocked out, the rest will come crashing down, much as it did in the First World War.
Well, anyway, that was just sort of like, it was kind of like, you know, everybody likes to talk about conspiracies. So,
well, you know, conspiracies are fun because they without having any real complex information, they just sort of make a kind of general sense, particularly when we all feel powerless and have a sense, which is legitimate, that stuff's happening over which we have no control.
Well, anyway, the concept I wanted to just bring across.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I think it's important to deal with that. But I like my non-conspiratorial, just drunken louts explanation. Because I think it's the most likely. But that doesn't mean that the Russians didn't make a very bad decision in allowing or training, if they did indeed do that, which is the most reasonable explanation, training these drunken louts, as I call them, and how to use a very sophisticated, very accurate, very powerful anti-aircraft weapon system.
Well, the soap opera continues.
Yeah, all right. Thanks a lot, Ben.
Yeah. We should also note right here, because there's never an international crisis that American conservatives will hesitate to exploit to their own advantage. Conservatives are already comparing President Obama's response to this crisis unfavorably to that of President Reagan in 1983 when a Korean airliner was shot down.
But he didn't do anything.
He didn't do anything. He remained on vacation for another 4 days.
Didn't want to leave, as people said, you have to go to Washington.
No, he didn't. And he finally gave a statement about it several days later, whereas Obama has responded immediately.
Well, yeah. I mean, the difference is so startling. In fact, people just don't remember. Remember this, that terrorists blew up the headquarters of the Americans in Beirut, you know, the hotel there, right around the time of all of this. And the American response to that was to flee and make a war in Grenada.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know why Reagan is deified. He was relatively incompetent, probably really seriously mentally hurt by the attempt to kill him. You know, the guy was a bad president.
Man, he was really good in that movie with the chimp, though.
He was good with the chimp, and he obviously was more intelligent than the chimp, and to be fair. Mm-hmm. And it also is the case that his affable persona and the advertising around him, America's Back, etc., really did work. As symbolic reestablishment of the United States hegemony in the region.
I think he even got top billing above the chimp in that movie.
I would hope.
I think he did. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Corey did so. He writes, when Bush was looking into Putin's soul, Did he not see that the man is a Cold War loving, irresponsible, irrational thug? Or those were those the admirable traits? I don't know. But that raises a question I think we have to ask in this context. Yeah. Does Putin, is he an imperialist by nature? Does he want to restore Russia to a great power like it was in the Soviet era?
I think he has some dreams to restore Russia to a significant role in the world, a thing that was lost. One of the really lost opportunities of the collapse of the Soviet Union was an opportunity to actually create in that region a stable, successful economy. Instead, oligarchs who were before that time bureaucrats in the Soviet system, oligarchs ended up with all the stuff, and they ended up creating a hyper-capitalist system driven by oil revenues, yep, and gas revenues and so on. And what we've seen is that Putin definitely punishes those who oppose him, taking their property away, taking their freedom away.
Yeah.
So my fast answer is yes. He's not a nice guy. He's not my favorite guy.
All right, let's go back to the phones.
He looks good without his shirt, though. Sorry. Go ahead.
Barth, good morning.
Good morning, boys. Just the last hyper-capitalist oligarchs. I think most of them were supported by the bureaucrat class, but they weren't bureaucrats themselves. They were mostly thugs and criminals with a lot of money to spend and a lot of influence to lavish on an appropriately cooperative governmental structure. So
I don't know the answer. I don't know whether that, I guess that's correct. I don't know enough about the modern Russian history.
Well, I can't claim to know any of them personally, but
you'd be rich, man, rich.
But you basically get a bunch of toadies who are making literally, you know, $50 a month, $100 a month, and these people offering them bribes and skim off of diverting assets or making fire sale prices on all of these things from the crumbling economy.
Well, that's true. I mean, the what you just said is definitely the case. It was an enormous moment of opportunity to exploit if you had gold or dollars to use.
Well, there were similar, although not quite so dramatic, instances in the history of our own country during the Depression, mm-hmm, where the wealthy class was able to essentially buy up all the prime real estate or purchase whole industrial plants and structures, you know, at literally pennies on the dollar.
Yes.
If not, you know, mills on the dollar.
Well, in fact, the way in which the land was divvied up after the American or during the American Revolution essentially gave vast tracts of land to people like Washington and Jefferson and people like that. So already you have that tendency. Land then was wealth. You have that tendency in American history.
Land still is wealth. Always
true.
Will be.
There was a earlier question about why that plane was flying over a war zone.
Yes, good question.
But that plane was flying at 50,000 plus feet.
Well, actually, 33,000 when it was hit. But okay. But you're fundamentally right. And the reason is fuel. It is it was the most efficient route to go from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur, and this was a common route, commonly used, and I don't think either the Dutch or the Malaysians really thought that anybody would be crazy enough and stupid enough and evil enough to knock out this
drunken enough
to knock this out.
And in real terms, I don't know that the people on the ground were necessarily thinking of this in advance. You know, I'm kind of leaning towards your explanation that just somebody saw this as a target of opportunity and said, hey, I wonder if we can...
Well, I have a whole line which comes out of Fantasy Island or one of those things. The plane! The plane!
Yeah.
You know.
The plane, boss?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead and shoot the plane!
Hey, thanks for the call, man.
One other short okay. touch. The KAL flight that your earlier caller made reference to, let's just get that totally out of the picture here, folks, because that really had a lot of overtones of American spy masters at work, because there was a spy plane in the sky around that time.
Yeah.
But this one, there's nothing to correlate that experience. And let's face it, I don't think these guys had sophisticated radar or anything that was giving them a world view of what was going on in their airspace.
Well, of course, I have no idea, but yeah, I think you're probably right. I think, again, I like the simple... the simple explanation of drunken louts who've been overtrained on a very highly sophisticated technical weapon.
Indeed.
Hey,
well,
thanks.
All of those surplus military officers from the collapse of the Soviet Union, you know, they knew how to do this, and they don't have a job anyway. So.
Well, there's that possibility. Anyway, listen, thanks for the call, man.
You bet. Good day.
Deplane boss.
I'm sorry, I can't help it.
That's the high level of analysis we bring you on
well,
the Abe
really,
and Joe
I mean, it
show.
Is. If it weren't for the tragedy of it, it is a little bit like some fantasy show.
Yes, indeed. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 and Alternative Radio, Lester Brown, founder of the World Watch Institute, speaks on the future of civilization.
What future? Sorry, go ahead.
At 10, Air Cascadia is off. We'll go straight to Flashpoints, which features an interview with a doctor working furiously to save lives as supplies dwindle and the bombs continue to fall in the Gaza Strip, and a report on this past weekend's San Francisco rally and protest march against Israel's war.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I never saw anything on the news about that.
Yeah, protests don't tend to make the news anymore.
You know, that is interesting. You know, they don't. They
really don't.
During the Vietnam era, of course, protests were the news.
Yeah, they were. When the Iraq War was launched, they were conspicuously not the news.
Right.
Different people own the media, as engineer Steve points out. All right. At 11 on stage and studio, host D. Mayor Roberts talks with Anon It Moves, Stringhouse Theater, and Original Practice Shakespeare Festival. At 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Jakob and Arnold Pander.
Hey, I know those guys.
Hey, cool. About their joint show, Fabrication Corrosion, at the Mark Woolley Gallery. Thanks, KABU members, for your generous support. And if you are not yet a member of KABU, you can become one right now
by going to
KBOO.fm and clicking on the tip jar. You don't have to wait for a membership drive. You can do it right
really,
now.
Really? You know, show us your independence and give us a few million dollars. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. I heard Amy mention a couple days ago on her broadcast that about 100 of those passengers on that airline were AIDS researchers or
yes, well, I don't know about the number, but it was a large number. They were going to this very major AIDS conference that you know that now is missing some people who really have done some great work on combating AIDS.
So I just wonder if that had any bearing on whether or not they targeted that plane deliberately.
Nah, you know, I really think that as we analyze what we can find, unless there's some smoking gun somewhere that surprises a lot of us, it's really kind of ugly simple. These guys were trained on how to use this weapon. They have the weapon. They'd used it effectively against a transport plane. They didn't probably know what the hell the plane was. They probably didn't have a clear image of it. It was like I joked about the old Fantasy Island thing. The plane, you know, let's shoot down the plane.
Yeah, very unlikely that somebody was lying in wait trying to shoot down AIDS researchers out of the sky.
Yeah, well, why?
Well, Putin and, I mean, there's a lot of anti-gay sentiment over that way.
Yeah, Putin's a big homophobe. It's true.
It's a possibility, and I guess the truth will out eventually, maybe.
Well, I don't think he's such a homophobe that he would therefore kill AIDS researchers trying to stop the disease. I mean, that really, come on, that strains credulity.
Well,
you know?
Well, never know. Anyway.
Okay.
Later.
Hey, thanks for the call. I really, really doubt it.
Nah.
All right, who's next? Ralph, good morning.
And if you're just tuning in, before we go to Ralph, we want to remind you, you're listening to KBOO, 90.7 FM. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, and we're talking about the bloodlands, about Ukraine, about the borders with the Russians and the borders with the European Union, and the shooting down of the Malaysian aircraft.
And about the fact that this unfortunate piece of territory has seen far much more death and suffering over the centuries than any place ever should.
Really?
Yeah. All right. Ralph, go ahead.
Hey, guys. You know, the last time I was talking about this issue, I brought up the idea that Russia, China, Brazil, and India...
The BRICS!
...are moving... The BRICS, yes. Which they just had a conference.
Yes.
And they've decided they're going to start trading in non-dollar trade deals.
Right.
And I said this is going to lead to war. And I think we're just seeing an escalation.
Why do you see it leading necessarily to war? I'm not quite sure I understand. Just because it's a rival trade bloc?
No, if people don't trade in the dollar, in order to have your own currency have any value, you have to have something on reserve to back it up, and that's either gold or the currency of the day, which is dollars. So people have to have, you know, tons of dollars, and they have to trade with dollars. If the dollar wasn't the trade mechanism of the world, the dollar would be worth hardly anything. And the banks, particularly the London, New York banks, would not have the kind of leverage that they have on the world. And, I mean, that's a very simple explanation.
So, therefore, there has to be war?
Well, in some people's minds, there has to be war. I'm certainly not advocating for it. I think we can all get along. But, you know, the people that control the money supply, they also control the war games. I mean, that's pretty obvious if you just go back and look at history of who funds things. One site I would like to point out that I think has the most up-to-date information, and I'll give a caveat. I don't agree with every article that's on the site. But
okay, what's the site?
It's called Veterans Today, and they have an article. The Russians have released their radar information. The U.S. has not, and there was a Ukrainian Su-25 fighter jet following the plane, and they also had shown satellite photos of the Ukrainian military had placed just very recently a Buk missile launcher system in close to rebel territory. What there is no satellite or image of is any sort of trail from the ground to the plane, which if a missile was launched from the ground, it would have left a huge trail.
Yeah, that particular statement, I don't know, is true, actually. I mean, I think there is a heat signature from the launch and the heat signature of the missile going through the air and then the heat signature of its being detonated.
When a missile is launched, I mean, there's a smoke trail. I don't, you know, that's just the way those things work.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I'm doubting the notion that there is no evidence that this missile was the thing that did it.
Well, you know, let's stay tuned. But
really? I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
Well, if it wasn't a missile, then what are you suggesting it was?
Well, if you look at how quickly the media jumped all over this whole notion that it was the rebels launched this missile with the help of Russia, it was all, seems to me, another one of these scripted things where all of a sudden they've all got this story. I think what happened was is they wanted these guys to shoot down this plane, have it crash in Ukrainian territory, and then blame Russia for it.
Who wanted the plane shut down?
Well, the current government in the Ukraine is an assembly of the West. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, but the West
is together by the Ukrainians. Didn't say, "Whoa, hey, we."
But wait, you're positing that somehow the knocking off of this civilian aircraft would in some way help one side or another in this struggle, and I don't think it helps anybody. I think it's just a horrible disaster.
Well, it's a disaster now because it didn't go off as they wanted it to go off, so they're now trying to cover.
Well, if they wanted to bring down the plane, it most certainly did.
Yeah, they did, but they didn't bring it down. The guys, they did not, it was not brought down, according to what I have now. And again, you know, we're all just speculating.
Yes.
But there is no evidence that it was shot from the ground.
We disagree on that. I think there was evidence. There also is in today's New York Times photos of what appear to be exactly what you would expect to have happen if that was the kind of missile and how it went off. There is pieces of the plane with the peppering of the shotgun-like pellets that is exactly
right.
What is used.
Well, let's not forget that the New York Times did a beautiful song and dance on the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and you know, they said, this is a slam dunk, right?
But, yeah, this is true.
And it was all BS.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Come on, the New York Times.
Yes, we'll stipulate that the New York Times' record on journalism is not always been sterling. However, the evidence suggests that this plane was shot down from the ground. Evidence further suggests that in all likelihood, it was shot down by Ukrainian separatists with a weapon given to them by the Russians. We've stated at the outset of this show very clearly that we don't know for certain that that is the case, but it seems far more likely than the theory that you're positing right
Certainly
now.
Certainly, we know the following things indisputably. That there was a missile fired, that it did strike this airplane, that it was a Russian manufactured object. We don't know whether it came from Ukraine or from the separatists or conceivably, but unlikely, from the Russians. But all of that is clear. We also know that it was unlikely that the separatists would have known how to operate it without help of somebody, some technologist who could show them how to push the appropriate buttons. But, you know,
I think that's the whole point of why they could say, well, look, you know, these guys couldn't have done this without
Russian
military assistance. And that's exactly the point.
But wait, think about it. The basic rule in trying to figure out a crime is who benefits. And there's no particular agency of benefit in this disaster. Certainly, the Dutch get nothing out of it. The Malaysians get nothing out of it. The United States gets a casus belli if they want it, but essentially gets nothing out of it. The Russians certainly get nothing out of it. And the Ukrainians come off looking very weak. And the only people that really lose are these drunken louts who seem to be the largest part of the so-called soldiery of the separatist movement, the pro-Russian separatist movement. So I don't see a conspiracy of the kind you're suggesting.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to disagree with that, Joe, because again, you know, none of us were there.
We certainly don't know because we weren't there. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that. Let's face it. I mean, the news today is just a bunch of baloney, and it's manipulated for you to form an opinion. So my time's got to be way over.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to let you go. But I do want to say one thing. Because there are so many distortions, so many conspiracies, so many weird things that are not adequately explained, we all fall, and this is not a criticism of you specifically, but all of us, we all fall in a pattern of trying to find a solution or an explanation beyond what we think is the obvious one or the one that we believe is being put up by a government somewhere. So I appreciate your concern. I just don't think that particular theory has validity. But again, you're not wrong to wonder.
Okay, well, Veterans Today and just one more source to
absolutely no reason not to look at it.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Bye.
Bye bye. All righty. Let's go. Let's see who's next.
I'm really sad. I want to say I'm sad. All right, let's go to Linda.
Linda, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, you guys. I'm a little bit on your last caller's side. Not that I believe any particular version of what happened over there,
mm-hmm.
but I think you're dismissing the significance of the AIDS doctors and researchers who were killed. What I've heard is, you know, many people saying these were the people who are at the forefront of a cure. Without them, we may not get that. We may be set back 30 years, things like that. So there's a huge significance to that they died.
Hold on, Linda.
No, I'm not suggesting anything. Let me finish, Joe.
Okay.
I'm saying you're not giving it the significance to the impact of their deaths are. Whether someone is attempting to kill them for any particular purpose, I don't know. The other thing that you would be leaving out is who gave these drunken louts and their trainers the info that this was a cargo plane and that it would be okay to shoot down a cargo plane. Who fed them that information? And how did that end up getting part of this targeting of this plane? I don't think you're addressing that at all. So I like your scenario going for the most simple, but it's too simple, perhaps. So I'd say think further.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's do that then. Let's presume for the moment that this plane was brought down specifically so those AIDS researchers could be killed. It seems like an awful lot of trouble and a big roll of the dice to go through if you're looking to off those AIDS researchers.
Well, but I go beyond that. I don't see any reason on earth that a group of AIDS researchers, and their journey was mildly publicized, but not a lot. Any reason on earth to knock off that plane with those researchers with a view toward somehow stopping the cure for AIDS so that what? All gay men and straight people that have intercourse with people who have AIDS would die? I mean, I can't buy it.
These folks were on their way to Melbourne, Australia for an AIDS research conference. If you really wanted to put a dent in the effort to find a cure for AIDS, it wouldn't make more sense to sabotage the conference itself than to shoot down a plane en route?
I can't go there. I just can't go there.
No. I think it was an unfortunate coincidence, nothing more.
But it, what is interesting about that, what the part of the meta-analysis that we need to make is how all of us who are reasonably intelligent and reasonably well-read can perceive reasonably a doubt about the official story. And that all comes out of the fact that we've been lied to so often.
Yeah, you're right about that. I think we can all agree on that.
So the distrust about anything claimed by government becomes ubiquitous, and any possibility of a conspiracy becomes believable.
Yes.
And that's very unfortunate, and it doesn't help us understand exactly what's going on in Ukraine, the bloodlands.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let's go back to the phones. Per, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I have to disagree about one thing. You said that who benefits? Obviously, the Ukrainians benefit the most. The government of Kiev, they benefit greatly.
You know, actually, you're right. That is true.
I mean, Russia loses. Everybody else loses. Okay, but let's set aside that. I just want to give you a couple good reporters, writers to read.
Okay.
One is Robert Parry. I'm sure you know him.
Oh, I know him. Actually, I know him.
Consortium News. He's been writing about this for quite a while. He's got some excellent articles.
Uh-huh.
All right. Another one is a guy named Dmitry Orlov.
I've heard of him as well.
Yeah. Now, he's an interesting guy because he was born in the Soviet Union and grew up there until a teenager. His first book that came out was sort of how the Soviet collapse... The Soviets are able to collapse a lot more gently than the U.S. might when it happens here. And it's a very interesting book. Mm-hmm. But he's been writing about, he has a blog called Club Orlov, O-R-L-O-V. And he goes into all this stuff, and I think he's a very rational guy, and I would just recommend him highly.
Okay. That sounds like stuff that we all could benefit from reading.
Yeah, and he points out that it's the government in Kiev that benefits the most from all this. It goes into a lot of other stuff, too, that actually that the Ukraine is kind of in desperate straits. I mean, time is not on their side. And he goes into that in detail, too. So I'll just leave it at that. Dmitry Orlov, check him out.
All right, thank you very much for the call. Do we have time for another caller? Randy.
Okay, I'll be real quick.
Okay.
The thing I think that hasn't been mentioned about the Ukraine that needs to be mentioned is that the eastern Ukraine has some very key defense manufacturing capability that was put there by the old Soviet Union.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the key things of the reasons like why Putin is interested in this. I mean, basically, the Russian military makes a lot of use of helicopters, and a lot of the parts are manufactured in the eastern Ukraine.
That is interesting. That is very interesting. And I think you're correct. And I think that that helps to understand the real politic of the struggle over the eastern Ukraine.
Yes, and that was passed on to me by a former boss of mine who was ex-DOD.
Okay. Yeah,
so
no, I believe
much.
You're correct. And I appreciate the call.
All right, bye.
Where are we on all of this?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I wish people weren't so willing to jump to hard-to-sustain conclusions.
Well.
We all want to believe the worst. I understand that, especially, as you point out, since we've been lied to so many times. But I wish people would take a breath and think about it first.
Well, I am not certain of exactly where the origin of that missile was,
no.
who controlled it,
no.
and so on. So until we do know that, clearly know it, We have doubts. And I want to urge you all to stay tuned to KBOO. Remember that unlike any other news source in the local region, we deal with the real issues under the most difficult of circumstances.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back at you next week.
It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
And they'll be mine, all mine, practicing 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center screening of The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T as part of the Cinema Under the Stars program on Thursday, August 7th at 7 p.m. The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T is a musical fantasy film with the story, screenplay, and lyrics written by Dr. Seuss. Before the film, the Grand Style Orchestra will be playing a set of improvisational free jazz music. Again, that's The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T, part of the Top Down Cinema series of the Northwest Film Center, on August 7th on the roof of the Hotel Deluxe's parking structure at Southwest 15th and Yamhill. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, Lester Brown, founder of the World Watch Institute, speaks on the future of civilization. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today. We'll go straight to Flashpoints, which features an interview with a doctor working furiously to save lives as supplies dwindle and the bombs continue to fall in the Gaza Strip, and report on this past weekend's San Francisco rally and protest march against Israel's war. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host Deep May Roberts talks with Anon It Moves, Stringhouse Theater, and Original Practice Shakespeare Festival. At 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Jakob and Arnold Pander about their joint show, Fabrication Corrosion, at the Mark Woolley Gallery. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one. Just go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. Now here's Alternative Radio.